All right.
Hey, guys.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flake Chicks Podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm good. I'm interested to talk about this movie because I'm in...
The musical.
The musical of this movie.
Yeah. I'm seeing it tomorrow.
Really interesting. Really interesting.
Yeah, I didn't... Like, I'd seen the movie before a long time ago. And I knew... I was aware of the characters because you have been talking about them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I did not remember a lot of this movie.
It's pretty forgettable.
It's really forgettable. It's so forgettable. That is such a good way to describe it.
It's fun, but it's not good.
No.
I mean, nobody ever thought it was good. I just remember, like, the first time I ever saw this movie, I watched it, like, sort of. Whenever I got cast in Evil Dead, I watched, like, half-watched this, but I didn't really watch it all. I don't even think I finished it. I just remember being like, is this supposed to be bad on purpose? Like, I truly can't tell if they knew
that it was bad.
It was bad. Or, like, if someone knew it was bad.
And some people didn't.
I don't know.
I have no idea.
It seems like it could be one of those things where they were like, well, we won an audience, and horror, the expectations are very low.
Yeah.
So we can make a really low-budget horror film and probably have pretty moderate success with it, and then we could actually sneak in some comedy there.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't tell if that was on purpose or if it's just a really, really bad movie that it's really funny.
So today we're talking about the 1981 The Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Directed by Sam Raimi.
Yes. He directed...
And wrote.
He directed and wrote it, but he also directed the 80s Spider-Mans,
mm-hmm.
and I believe he directed the Spider-Mans that have Tobey Maguire in it.
Wow, I love those.
I'll confirm that, but I'm pretty sure. Let's see, Sam Raimi.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
He did, yep. All the Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3.
Love that.
And Drag Me to Hell.
Really?
Yep.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
There you go. Sam Raimi.
Sam Raimi. He was 20 when he made this movie.
Yeah, he was really young. He's still young.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about this plot.
Yep.
Or lack thereof.
Wait, first of all, what's the budget and what was the...
Oh, the budget? Between 350,000 to $400,000. Truly one of the small... And then the box office, here we go. It's between $2.7 million or $29.4 million.
Oh, my God.
That's a huge...
Profit.
Well, also... Between 2 million or 30 million.
Yeah, why are you not sure?
What? So, I'm guessing it's like one of those, it was $2 million actually when it came out, but
mm-hmm.
because it's played in movies so often.
That's fair, yeah.
I don't know. Oh my gosh, sorry, I'm just sleepy. But, here we go. Oh, I guess it was... It 2 million in the US and between 2.7 and 29. I still don't understand that. Who wrote that? What is the box office? So, anyway, The Evil Dead obviously has spawned a franchise
and a cult following.
It has two direct sequels written and directed by Sam Raimi, Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness, and a fourth film called Evil Dead, which was a soft reboot. Followed up by a TV series called Ash vs. the Evil Dead, which aired from 2015 to 2018. I don't know what you possibly could have... I've not seen the TV show at all. Have you?
No, I've only seen Army of Darkness.
I don't know at all what you could possibly...
Add? Like,
what could you stretch that out into a TV series? It's like pretty movie-based. It's really interesting because... So the only character that is in everything...
Is Ash,
who's played by Bruce Campbell. And it's really interesting because the character that he's, like, known... This, like, character, Ash, is...
Yeah.
He's, like, a cultural icon. He's been in so many things. Like, Billy and Mandy, we were mm-hmm. watching this the other day. There's a character in Billy and Mandy, or The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy, called Haas Delgado, which is so clearly just an Ash ripoff.
Yeah.
He literally has a chainsaw hand.
There's also an American Dad episode where Stan has a chainsaw hand.
Yeah, that's always Ash.
So that's like Army of Darkness stuff.
Ash, yeah, that's definitely, Army of Darkness is probably like, has the most iconic imagery.
And the most quotable.
Yeah, definitely the most quotable. But as far as like the plot everyone knows from Evil Dead, it's the first one.
Yeah. The cabin in the woods,
college students, mm-hmm. all that. But I think it's really interesting because Ash is like this gruff, no-nonsense, very masculine.
Yeah.
Like, take charge, like,
kiss
a woman.
Very much like Fred from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, very like, but like more...
More badass.
More gruff. Yeah, yeah. He's like blood, known for covered in blood mm-hmm. and his chainsaw hand. But in this movie, he's such a whiny little baby.
He is!
He doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. He's like just accidentally ends up being the last one, basically.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love that, like, who was like, you know what? Everyone loved Ash. We're gonna bring it back.
Let's bring it back.
I really think everyone just loved Scott. And
yeah.
then they were like, but we let Ash survive.
So and we have to change the character.
And he has the chin.
Yeah, true.
So we'll bring him back.
Yeah.
So here we go. The plot. 5 Michigan State University students, Ash Williams, his girlfriend Linda, his sister Cheryl, their friend Scott, and Scott's girlfriend Shelley, vacation in an isolated cabin in rural Tennessee. Approaching the cabin, the group notices the porch swing moving on its own, but suddenly stop as Scott grabs the doorknob. While Cheryl draws a picture of a clock, the clock stops. That's
such a weird scene.
Detail. Also, I love the way people write these.
I know. I love sometimes how, like, Wikipedia synopses are, like, so tender.
Also, just, like, the weird stuff, they'll be like, that's important. I gotta cut this thing, but that thing has to go in.
The clock thing.
We gotta say that she was drawing a picture of a clock, so that's gotta go.
Because I thought about that for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, me too. I mean, yeah, I was like, wow, Cheryl's a good artist. It's a shame what happened to her. The clock stops, and she hears a faint, demonic voice tell her to join us. It's not that faint.
No.
Pretty loud. You want to take a walk?
What the fuck was that?
Her hand becomes possessed, turns pale. Pale is white. Quite the word. Quite the word for what happens to her hand. It's disgusting. That is a dead person's hand.
Yeah.
And she draws a picture of a book with a demonic face on its cover. I could not tell if that's what that was.
Oh, I had no idea.
I just thought she was making scribbles.
Yeah.
It was a book? Okay.
Did not read.
Did not realize it was a book. And I'm in the music. I should know.
I should know, but I didn't.
Although shaken, she does not mention the incident. Well, that can't be true. Oh, well, I guess it can. No, it can't be true, because she mentions it, because then Scott makes fun of her at the dinner table.
And yeah.
Like, ooh, something in the cellar.
Yeah.
And then when the cellar door... what's down there? I literally could quote this whole movie, because I learned all the lines. When the cellar trap door... I hate when they say that. The cellar trap door.
It's just a cellar door.
It's just a cellar door. A trap door implies that it's a trap.
This goes into the cellar.
It's not hidden. You're supposed to use that to get in.
You can, it wasn't like it just popped out of nowhere. It was there
it
already.
It wasn't like it was a hidden door that was meant, it's not like in Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, the door is
visible.
How it's
like a hidden passage that accidentally traps you. It's like you're meant to go, that's the cellar.
Yeah, it's where you put your canned goods.
That's where you're supposed to go. So anyway, it flies open during dinner. Shelley, Linda, and Cheryl remain upstairs as Ash and Scott investigate the cellar. They find...
I dare you guys to go back upstairs.
I'm trying a lot of the fucking sand.
Do not read the Latin.
We're just going to be quoting Cabin in the Woods.
Because it's the far better adaptation.
They find the Natrum Demonto, a Sumerian version of the Egyptian Book of the Dead.
Necronomicon.
That's literally so many words.
I know.
A Sumerian version of the Egyptian Book of the Dead.
I think overly complicated.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what does it matter? Yeah, in the musical, it's called the Necronomicon.
Yeah.
Necronomicon Ex Mortis.
Which most people know what Necronomicon
roughly
means.
Roughly translated, Book of the Dead.
Yeah.
That's what it means. Yeah, they change it in the musical. And they take the item, along with an archaeologist's tape recorder, and they take the items upstairs. Scott plays a tape of incantations that resurrect a demonic entity. Cheryl yells for Scott to turn off the tape recorder, and a tree branch breaks through one of the cabin's windows. Cheryl, it was just the wind! The wind? We're inside! I thought what you said before was stupid, but now that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. What a stupid bitch. He literally called her a stupid bitch.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. Really? These are the kinds of things that I'm like, that has to be, it's supposed to be on purpose, right? Nobody wrote that, seriously.
Maybe they did, though.
What a stupid bit, Cheryl. I love that Cheryl's, like, the prettiest one there, too.
Yeah.
It's so weird. So, anyway, later that evening, an agitated Cheryl goes into the woods to investigate strange noises.
This scene.
So... I forgot.
It's so terrible. I was, like, so confused. I was like, are my neighbors gonna hear this? Because this is, like, upsetting.
It sounds like porn.
It does. Like, she's, like, running around screaming and stuff, but she sounds like, ah,
ah. Well, she's getting raped by the trees.
Yeah.
She gets penetrated by the trees. Which, by the way, just maybe the worst thing I could think of.
Oh, it was horrible. I was so like, what the actual hell is going on?
And I was like... If there was ever a pain in life that I do not want to experience, it's being raped by trees.
Oh, yeah.
Horrible. Yeah, so she goes into the trees, where she is attacked and raped by demonically possessed trees.
There you go.
When she manages to escape and returns to the cabin, bruised and anguished, Ash agrees to take her back into town. I love this part. They're like, what's wrong with you, Cheryl? What the fuck? Why do you look like this? What the hell, Cheryl? You're in your underwear? And she's like, Ashley in the trees. And he's like... Now? You want to go now? Don't you see, Ash? It's not going to let us leave. The trees are alive. I love it. I love this movie. I don't know. It's so stupid.
It's dumb.
It's bad. It's really bad.
I was so bored.
I love when the branches are coming for her because they're just going like, it's clearly just people.
She's just like,
branches going, like hitting her. I love it. So, Ash agrees to take her back into town, only to discover that the bridge to the cabin has been destroyed.
Whoa!
Cheryl panics as she realizes they are now trapped and the demonic entity will not let them leave. Back at the cabin, Ash listens to more of the tape, learning that the only way to kill the entity is to dismember a host. As Linda and Shelley play spades, I think that's such a funny scene.
That's so weird.
When she's, like, saying the cards, and Shelly's like...
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're totally right. Oh, my God, it's amazing how spot on you are. She's completely saying the wrong cards, and then she's like, it's like I have ESP or something. I'm just so good. I have this, like, sixth sense. And then Cheryl starts correctly guessing the cards with a weird voice. And she succumbs to the entity and levitates. In a raspy, demonic voice, she demands to know why they disturbed her sleep and threatens to kill everyone.
This was the coolest scene for me.
She stabs Linda in the ankle and throws Ash into a shelf. The ankle stab? Gross.
Gross.
It's meaty.
Yeah.
Ugh, I was like, disgusting. Scott knocks Cheryl into the cellar and locks her inside. When Scott knocks her into the cellar, he's fucking roundhousing her ass. He's literally kicks her in the fucking...
This isn't a fucking roadhouse.
He literally kicks her in the chin and she just flies back into the cellar. And then he just smacks her head and she goes like toppling in. The way that they deal with each other in this movie is so like unaffectionate. It's like they've never liked each other ever.
Yeah.
Everyone fights about what to do. Except Linda, who's fucking just got stabbed in the ankle. Shelley becomes paranoid upon seeing Cheryl's demonic transformation. She lies down in her room, but is drawn to look out the window, where a demon crashes through and attacks her. Shelley becomes a deadite and attacks Scott before he manages to throw her into the fireplace. Shelley attacks Scott again, and Scott stabs her in the back with a Sumerian dagger, apparently killing her. When she reanimates, Scott dismembers her with an axe and buries the remains. Shaken by the experience, he leaves to find a way back to town. He shortly returns, mortally wounded, and dies while warning Ash that the trees will not let them escape alive. When Ash checks on Linda, he is horrified to find that she has become possessed. She attacks him, but he stabs her with the Sumerian dagger. Unwilling to dismember her, he buries her instead. She revives and attacks him, forcing him to decapitate her with a shovel and retreat to the cabin.
Brutal.
Brutal. The necklace.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. The necklace. He just keeps being like, this necklace. Fucking Linda, who literally has no fucking personality. I love the part when they're in the car and Scott's like, well, we're getting everybody cheap, so it may not be so nice. And then Shelly's like, ugh, I'm sure it'll be a dump. And then
Ash is like, it'll be great.
It'll be nice. And she just goes, yeah. She goes, Yeah. She's just, like, everything she does has, like, the weirdest... I don't know what the motivation behind it. There's a part... The part where they're just sitting on the thing and he's clearly trying to be like, hey, Linda. Yeah. He's like, hey, Linda, let's stay up here and just listen to the storm for a minute. And she's like, yeah, okay. But let me go check on Cheryl first. Like, why? And then the stupid eye close.
Oh, my tag God. With
the necklace stealing from a blind man. That's kind of cute, though. I do not understand the Ash appeal.
No. Like, I had a question about this whole thing, and maybe...
Is he supposed to be hot?
Well, maybe you can answer this. Were, like, unibrows considered sexy back then?
See, I don't know, because a lot of people, I feel like the people call, like, early 80s, late 70s, like, Ted Bundy, for example. People
also had a raging unibrow.
A raging unibrow, but people are like, he was so attractive for the time.
Also, I'm like, one of his eyes was higher than the other.
I'm like, it takes nothing. I don't know, apparently, maybe I just have... way too high of standards, but no matter how attractive a man is, if he has, like, a unibrow, I'm just, like, not in, like, just
I'm take just like, it's a pretty easy fix.
It's really easy fix. Just take care of it.
Yeah.
I'm guessing...
I naturally have a unibrow. I feel like... But you would never know.
I feel like it must have been, like, for men or something. Like, a certain type of man must have, like, had that going for him. I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't understand... I don't get the appeal.
Me neither.
I think he's annoying.
Is he supposed to be hot? I can't figure out. He's got an ugly ass outfit on.
Yeah.
His hair's gross. I mean, he looks okay. He looks better. Honestly, he looks better when he's drenched in blood.
Way true.
Way better. So anyway, he decapitates Linda. Back inside, Ash discovers that Cheryl has escaped the cellar. Cheryl manages to elude Ash for a period of time, culminating in her attempting to choke Ash.
Yep.
Ash manages to escape her grasp and then shoots Cheryl in the jaw. As Ash is barricading the door, Scott reanimates into a deadite. Scott attacks Ash and inadvertently knocks the Natrum Demonto close to the fireplace. Ash gouges Scott's eyes out and pulls a tree branch from Scott's stomach, causing him to bleed out and fall to the ground. Cheryl breaks through the barricade and knocks Ash to the floor. As Scott and Cheryl continue to attack Ash on the ground, Ash manages to grab the Natrum Demonto and throws it into the fireplace. While the book burns, the deadites freeze in place and begin to rapidly decompose. Large appendages burst from both corpses covering Ash in blood. Dawn breaks and Ash stumbles outside. As Ash walks away from the cabin, an unseen entity moves rapidly through the forest, rushes through the cabin, and attacks him from behind. And that's the end.
That's the end of the movie.
This does not really continue in the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I don't really understand.
I just think it's campy.
Yeah, I guess. The trivia on this movie is, like, literally the most insane trivia I've ever read.
I would love to hear some.
Okay, it is, there's so much, it's insane. Okay, I love, this is my favorite piece, it's the first one. The original script called for all the characters to be smoking marijuana when they are first listening to the tape. The actors decided to try this for real, and the entire scene had to be later reshot due to their uncontrollable behavior. They got too high!
Guys, just smoke less.
I know! Jesus, don't have to smoke a huge joint, like, I don't know. Like...
It's just one scene with a tape. Yeah, sure, they were uncontrollably behaving because of the weed they smoked during that one scene, sure.
At the end of Principal Shooting in Tennessee, the crew put together a little time capsule package and buried it inside the fireplace of the cabin as a memento of the production to whomever found it. The cabin has since been destroyed and only the fireplace is still intact.
Wow.
At the end of a normal day of shooting, Bruce Campbell would return home in the back of a pickup truck because he was covered in fake blood from head to toe.
Yep.
The blood is a combination of Karo syrup, non-dairy creamer, and red food coloring.
Yeah, that's how you make, like, edible blood.
At one point, Bruce Campbell's shirt that he wears in the film was so saturated with the fake blood that after drying it by the fire, the shirt became solidified and broke when he tried to put it on.
That's so funny.
I know.
Yeah, for Evil Dead the Musical, there's, like, a lot of fake blood, and we thought about making fake blood like that, but Karo syrup is so sticky.
Yeah.
It would just be bad.
Yeah. So this is some 1981 stuff that would never happen today. So the cabin used as the film set was also lodging for the 13 crew members, with several people sleeping in the same room. Living conditions were terrible, and the crew frequently argued. The cabin didn't have any plumbing, so the actors went days without showering, and fell ill frequently in the freezing weather. By the end of production, they were burning furniture to stay warm.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's more about this, too, later.
Holy shit!
Yeah, so Sam Raimi originally wanted to title this film Book of the Dead, but producer Irvin Shapiro changed the title to The Evil Dead for fear that kids would be turned off seeing a movie with a literary reference.
Book.
Book. I know, it just said book.
A literary reference, it just says the word book. These kids these days, they don't know, they don't like paper. Don't remind them of paper at all.
Bruce Campbell put up his family's property in northern Michigan as collateral so that Sam Raimi not only could finish the film, but also blow it up to 35mm film, which was required for theatrical release. Raimi was so grateful for his financial contribution, he credited him as a co-producer.
I just want to say, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck? Can you imagine? You're some fucking nobody actor. You've never been in shit, because you haven't been.
Yeah.
You haven't been. None of these people had ever done anything. And it's like, hey, I just really want this movie to go to the theaters. I think it's so good.
But director Sam Raimi and star Bruce Campbell were friends from high school, where they made many Super 8 films together. They would often collaborate with Sam's brother, Ted Raimi.
All right.
So they were really good friends.
All right.
This is filmed in a real-life abandoned cabin.
Yeah.
The eerie wind noise in the movie was recorded by Sam Raimi. He first heard it through his bedroom window while he was trying to sleep and thought it would be perfect for the movie. When there wasn't any filming, Bruce Campbell would actually help out with the crew in prepping shots and props around the set.
I kind of love that.
Yeah, he
like... It's like, so obviously this was never meant to be, like...
A big deal.
A big deal.
Yeah.
So obviously they were just like, oh, it's gonna be this little film that we release.
Yeah. So, after completing principal photography in the winter of 1979 to 1980, most of the actors left the production.
Why winter?
Yeah. However, there was still much of the film to be completed. Most of the second half of the film features Bruce Campbell and various stand-ins to replace the actors who left.
They were like, fuck no, I'm not staying here anymore.
True. Bruce Campbell twisted his ankle on a root while running down a steep hill, and Sam Raimi and Rob Tappert decided to tease him by poking his injury with sticks, thus causing Campbell to have an obvious limp in some scenes.
That's so mean.
I know. The opening sequence of the evil moving over the pond was achieved by having Bruce Campbell push Sam Raimi in a dinghy while he filmed the shot.
Bruce Campbell truly deserves the franchise.
Honestly.
He did so much for this stupid franchise.
The white contact lenses were very painful to wear. They covered half the eye and had to be taken out every 15 minutes to allow the eyes to breathe.
The friggin' 80s contacts were awful.
Yeah, terrible.
Like, 80s contacts were glass. Like, they were just little pieces of glass. Yeah. That's true. I mean, like, what can you do? That's what Now, the contacts like that wouldn't hurt.
Yeah. The temperatures were so cold at time during shooting that the camera and other wiring froze. They then had to be thawed by the fireplace inside the cabin.
Why would you film this in winter? Why would you film this in winter?
I don't understand.
You could film it in fall.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be so cold.
Yeah. A cameraman slipped during filming, smashing his camera into Bruce Campbell's face and knocking out several of his teeth. Yeah.
Bruce Campbell really fucking took the L on this movie.
On the very first day of shooting, during a scene shot on the bridge, the crew got lost in the woods. The tape recorder found in the cabin belonged to Bruce Campbell's father. Once again,
the Campbells are coming in.
There's a ripped poster of The Hills Have Eyes from 1977 visible. Ostensibly, this was a reference to a ripped poster of Jaws that appeared in The Hills Have Eyes. Sam Raimi and the others interpreted that as Wes Craven suggesting that Hills was much more frightening than Jaws. Thus, they showed a ripped Hills poster because their film was to be even scarier yet.
And yet
it was not. I watched The Hills Have Eyes. Far scarier than this film. Not even that scary, but, like, still scarier than this.
Oh, I mean, this is not a scary
movie. This is not a scary movie.
It's a funny movie.
It is a funny movie. Let's see. In his autobiography,
it just feels like a fucking 20-year-old shithead wrote this, which is exactly what happened.
Well, exactly what happened. In his autobiography, Bruce Campbell described the film's production as a comedy of errors and 12 weeks of mirthless exercise in agony.
Yeah. Did you know it? Do you know what his book's called?
No.
It's called If Chins Could Talk.
That's hilarious.
And it's like the confessions of a B-movie actor.
That's hilarious. Bruce Campbell, honestly, funny.
I know. We have a copy of that book in Evil Dead the Musical.
That's funny.
We use it.
Most of the demon POVs that glide across the ground were shot by mounting the camera on a 2x4 while Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell ran along holding either side.
I have to say, they, for the budget that they have, they do some pretty impressive shots and
it's true.
Effects.
It's true.
Considering, like, how creative they probably had to be to get it done.
Yeah, very true. At the premiere screenings of Evil Dead, blood donor stations were giving free tickets to the movie along with pin badges saying, "I bled for the Evil Dead," That's to blood donors.
That's a good idea.
So, very cute. It said it was their way of giving blood back to the community after so much fake blood was used in filming. So,
all cool. Right.
I mean, neat.
The premiere of the Evil Dead, all five people that came.
After Scott says, "Don't you see, Ash, they're alive," he screams higher than his normal voice register. This was actually Sam Raimi's voice meshed in with Scott's scream. According to cast and crew members, this was one of the worst experiences they'd ever been involved in due to freezing temperatures, the locale, and Sam Raimi's filming, which took endless hours.
You know, Leonardo DiCaprio did that and they gave him an Oscar. These guys do it and they're just...
laughed at.
Fucking...
this is cool, though. One of the most intricate moments during editing was the stop-motion sequence where the corpses melted, which took hours
to
cut properly.
Yeah, I thought...
very impressive.
I was like, that must have taken a long time.
It's pretty impressive. I was like, that's a pretty cool shot. The film was shown to Stephen King, and it was his had his glowing endorsement of the film, which really sold it to the public.
Stephen King loves this movie.
Yeah, he loves it.
It's really bizarre, to be honest. Stephen King saw Stanley Kubrick's The Shining and thought it was trash, but he saw this and was like, this is amazing.
Incredible.
This is fucking art. He's like, Sam Raimi, do you want to direct all my movie books and make them exactly like this, please?
Christine, I want it like this.
Christine, The Shining, do you want to redirect The Shining?
The film ran out of money and only half of it was completed in the winter of 1980. In order to complete it, Sam Raimi, Rob Tapper, and Bruce Campbell did everything they could to complete the film. From taking out high-interest bank loans, borrowing money from friends and family, and even making cold calls to businesses around their hometown state of Michigan. The cold calls worked in that they actually got catering, gasoline, and other necessities that the cast and crew needed.
Well, I guess it worked out in the end. They made that money back.
It's true. The white liquid that often emits from the possessed after they're injured or maimed is 2% milk.
Oh yeah, I knew that.
Joel Coen was an assistant editor on the film, as in the Coen brothers.
Yeah, so weird. So
very bizarre. Strange. Let's see. Production was frequently canceled when local hunters wandered into the location. This is the highest rated video rentals of its year.
What? Mm-hmm. So even in its time, it was just immensely popular.
Yeah.
Even when it first came out.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, very strange.
I kind of thought this would be like a movie that didn't get popular for a while.
Dead chickens were stabbed to replicate the sounds of mutilated flesh, and Bruce Campbell had to scream into a microphone for several hours.
No.
Several actors had inadvertently been stabbed or thrown into objects during production.
Stabbed?
Yeah.
Guys, nowadays this would literally
never happen.
Nobody would ever do this. They'd be like, I'm fucking calling the union.
Yeah. So weird.
I just think this movie is so bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about its reception.
Yeah.
Upon its release, contemporary critical opinion was very positive. Bob Martin, editor of Fangoria, reviewed the film before its formal premiere and proclaimed that it might be the exception to the usual run of low-budget horror films.
Fangoria is a big deal. That's a big horror magazine.
I know. He followed up on the praise after the film's premiere, stating, "Since I started editing this magazine, I have not seen any new film that I could recommend to our readers with more confidence that it would be loved, embraced, and hailed as a new milestone in graphic horror."
What?
The Los Angeles Times called the film an instant classic, proclaiming it as probably the grisliest well-made movie ever.
The grisliest well-made movie.
In 1982, this is the 80s.
Dude, have you seen the Texas Chainsaw Massacre? It's way better than this.
This came out long before the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
No,
long
Texas
after,
Chainsaw Massacre.
Long after.
I know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre was 74.
I know. Staff from Trade Magazine Variety wrote that the film emerges as the neck plus ultra of low-budget gore and shock effect, commenting that the powerful and inventive camera work was a key in creating a sense of dread. Are you joking? The amount of money they spent on fog must have been, like, half the budget.
It was so insane. The fog scenes, I was like, what the hell? There's too much fog.
Too much fog. The moon takes up half the sky. This is such a horrible film.
I know, it's terrible.
How did people unironically were like, this is a good movie. A good movie.
This is a good movie.
The acting is shit. Everything about
it. Everything's terrible.
I mean, the gore is all right.
It's fine.
It's interesting. Like
to see how it's done in the 80s.
The Deadites like look very interesting. I'll give them that. Like the demons look good.
They do. They do. They look scary.
But like, what?
It's not scary having her just sit on the floor and laugh.
The writing? I mean, I guess maybe this was like maybe the first film that ever did the like, five college students go to a secluded cabin in the woods.
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there were college students, like...
It's true.
I mean, they didn't go to a cabin in the woods, they just, you know, got caught up in a house with, you know, cannibals.
Right.
But...
I mean, I feel like maybe this is, like, the first, like, spring break vacation goes wrong, like, kind of thing, but it's still, like, I mean, I know now to us that's, like, so predictable. Like,
yeah, so played
out. It's understandable, because, like, this is the first thing that everyone... ripped off.
Yes.
But the fact that this was ever considered good. Because if you watch this now, nobody would think this is good.
No.
Everyone's like, it's campy, it's cheesy, it's fun. It's a fun thing to, like, throw things at and to, like, call out lines from. And it's got a fun, crazy franchise. But this movie is not good. British press for the film was positive. Ken Newman of the Monthly Film Bulletin, Richard Cook of NME, and Julian Pedley of Film and Filming all gave the film positive reviews during its early release.
What?
Pedley and Cook
compared... Were they seeing a different movie?
I don't know. Pedley and Cook compared this film to other contemporary horror films, writing that the film expressed more imagination and youthful enthusiasm than an average horror film. I think they just liked that the guy was 20.
Yeah.
Cook describes the camera work by Raimi as audacious. Stating that the film's visceral nature was greatly helped by the style of direction. I also don't know if maybe it's the way it's filmed and, like, and stuff being filmed like this now is very obvious.
Yeah.
But maybe it was that sort of, like, shaky, you don't know, you're, like, the perspective of the demon.
Yeah.
I don't know if maybe that was new.
I don't know. I really don't.
And,
Well, when was...
Now, here's the thing. Wooly Newman and several other critics complimented the film of its use of black comedy, which elevated the film above its genre's potential trappings. So a lot of people liked it as a comedy.
It's interesting because Friday the 13th came out in 1980, and that relies very heavily on like the POV shots of the killer. So does Sleepaway Camp.
But here's the thing too. It's like, a lot of people, obviously now, I think, see it as a comedy.
Yeah.
And like
a campy comedy.
A campy comedy. At the time, people saw it as, like, a black comedy, but also a horror.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if people, like, if I don't know if it's intended to be a comedy.
Yeah.
If it is, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But, like, I can't.
I don't think it is, though.
Tell. I literally just can't tell.
I can't. So I gave this film... 2 out of 10, but then I added 2 stars because without it, Cabin in the Woods would not exist, and that's one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah. Let's see what this says. Is Evil Dead, this is a forum, is Evil Dead meant to be funny? Let's see. Yes and no. Raimi and Co. wanted to make a film, but felt that a comedy wasn't a great idea, and after doing their research at a local drive-in, they knew that horror was the way to go. They made a short horror promo called Within the Woods, and positive reaction, they got this propelled to do the development and shooting of Evil Dead. Even though they were going for a full-on gross-out movie, Raimi's camera techniques and love of the Three Stooges tinged the film and created a horror hybrid that has influenced many generations of filmmakers. Apparently, what Sam and Ted Raimi had mostly made was comedies before. This was like their first horror film ever. They had been exclusively dealing in comedies up to this point. So, I think it's possible that they were not trying to make it comedic, but that they are comedy writers.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I honestly, here's the thing. This movie, I think, would probably be really fun if you were, like, in a space with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You could talk over it. Watching it on its own in your house by yourself is very boring. It's not a good enough movie to do that.
No.
It's not, like, funny when you're just watching it by yourself. If you're watching it, I think, with, like, a lot of friends, this is probably a really fun movie.
Oh, yeah. You can make fun of it, you know.
So, I would say, like, on your own, you're right. Like, 2 out of 10. With friends, probably, like, a 7 out of 10.
I'd give it more of a 6 out of 10 with friends. I've never watched it with friends, though.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. I feel like it would be better in, like, a public place because it would feed off of energy.
I also think you'll like it more after you see the musical.
I bet so, too.
Because the musical, I mean, the musical basically just rips its script straight from it. But, like, when you just watch it just be so, I don't know, when people recognize it, I guess, it's really weird. I think it's just such a weird movie. I have a review.
Okay.
Let me pull it up here. Bop. Bop. Here it is. 1 out of 10. Evil Dead, revisionist hype, and the abuse of superlatives. This is, without any doubt, one of the worst films ever made. I'm not a film snob or punk trying to antagonize the deluded legions of dupes who idolize this piece of garbage. I'm just trying to provide balance to the roars of approval for this not at all good film. Seriously, people, have you watched this? It's awful. And not even in an Ed Wood meets Dead Alive meets tongue-in-cheek kind of way. There is nothing, and I want to be crystal clear about this, nothing good about this movie. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. Save your stars. Seriously? 10 stars for this piece of crap? Are you insane? For a movie that delivers anything. Can we please relegate Sam Raimi and this train wreck to the pile of hyped up hacks and cult favorites where they belong? Most of them were just like, this isn't scary. And you're like, not at all.
Yeah, not at all.
Not at all scary. Not even a little tiny bit scary.
No, I didn't like it.
I love when he's in the basement and all the shit is just filling with blood.
Yeah.
And then the pipe bursts and blood just spills out onto it. It's so dumb. It's like, clearly they were trying to be scary and they're just very bad at it. And then everyone loved it.
And all the actors and crew had the worst time.
All the actors and crew hated making it, except for Bruce Campbell, who was like...
best friends with the director.
He was just so happy to be on a movie.
Yes.
And guess what? He got to fulfill his dream.
He did.
Now that's literally all he does.
He's super famous for it now.
Super famous. It's all he does.
Everyone knows who Bruce Campbell is.
It's true. He literally has never done, like, anything else.
Yeah.
All he does is play Ash.
Very interesting.
I think it's very... it's a bizarre moment. It would be interesting to see a thesis on why this movie was successful.
Yeah,
What about this movie made it...
what was appealing to people?
Because at this point, it's not like you didn't have other horror movies.
Again, Texas Chainsaw Massacre came out in 1974.
Night of the Living Dead came out in the 1960s and was, like, far superior to this film. It's, like, a good movie. I mean, there's plenty of... yeah, Texas Chainsaw is not the gore. You do have, like, Nightmare on Elm Street. It's not quite as, like, shaky camera woods
Nightmare
as
on Elm
this.
Street's 84.
Or 84. The Friday the 13th.
Yeah, Friday the 13th, 1980.
It's not quite as much as this, but it's not...
yeah.
It's not like it's...
it's really strange.
I find it... you know, honestly, I kind of have these feelings about the Blair Witch Project, too.
Uh-huh.
The Blair Witch Project, to me... I think it's a very bad movie.
Oh, yeah, it is.
But people...
it's so iconic.
It's so... it's because it was, like, the first found footage film, mm-hmm. even though it was fucking terrible. People now... even now, people watch it, and they're like, that's really good. And you're like, no, it's not really good.
No.
It's a bad... I get it was the first. So I feel like this must have been the first of something.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the first, like, horror comedy, sort of, even if it was unintentional.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the first horror comedy and people had never seen horror comedy.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I have no idea.
I mean, it's an accidental horror comedy, and it did inspire one of the best on-purpose horror comedies ever, but
yeah.
I feel like that has to be what it is.
Yeah.
It has to be that people were like...
I've never seen humor and horror
and
together.
And maybe that's what it was. And maybe they didn't mean for that. Because, I mean, all the rest of the Evil Deads are funny. On purpose.
Yeah,
purpose funny.
Yeah. Army of Darkness is
they're
super funny.
Ridiculous, over the top, funny, camp, just everything. I feel like maybe they didn't intend for that, but they were like, hey,
we'll
man,
just roll with the punches then.
Whatever. I'm 20 years
it's
old.
It's like how Tommy Wiseau was like, it was always supposed to be funny.
Yeah, and you're like, no, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. I mean, no, it wasn't.
I don't know.
Anyway, this movie is wild.
It's a bizarre piece of American culture, this film.
It is. It really is. Very American.
Very American. The all of it.
This, all of it.
The trope and...
Yeah.
It's really... I love everyone in this movie. I love Cheryl. I love how much everyone rags on her, despite the fact that she's, like, clearly the prettiest and smartest one there. Ash, everyone's supposed to think he's really hot. I don't get it. Nope. They're all the most average-looking people.
Except for Cheryl.
Except for Cheryl, who's really pretty, and everyone, like, constantly, like, fuck you, Cheryl. And it's like, for what?
What did she do?
Nothing. I don't understand. Does Bruce Campbell, did he ever get rid of his unibrow? Is it still there and...
I don't remember. I don't remember the unibrow, and I feel like I would have remembered the unibrow.
Let's see. Let's look it up. Bruce Campbell, Army of Darkness. Let's look up some pictures of him.
Oh, I think...
Oh, I can't tell.
I can't tell either.
I can't tell if that's blood. I love
this. I think it's gone.
This. It looks like it's gone.
I can't tell.
This is my boomstick. Well, it's definitely not there in the drawing. I love it, like, when they draw him, he's so attractive.
Oh, I know, and then he's not this looking at all. And then you look
at him in real life, you're like, this is just a normal looking man. Definitely not. There it is.
Yeah, no, he got rid of the unibrow.
It's just so, so dumb. Well, look, here he is, like, in the, he looks so much better later.
Yeah.
He really hadn't grown into himself yet when the first Evil Dead came out. I don't know. It's really bizarre. I think Bruce Campbell's someone that's not hot, but everyone just agreed we were gonna decide that he was hot, and so he became hot.
Yeah.
Well, what a weird movie this is.
Yes.
What a ride.
So, on Patreon, we're going to do Tusk, and we're gonna do a little experimental thing with it. So,
yeah.
We'll see how it goes. And then, on Sunday, a week from when this is coming out, we are going to do the 1984 and 2010 Nightmare on Elm Streets.
Yes.
So watch those. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Bye.